right? If I think it, I feel it. If I feel it, I act it. If I act it, I attract it, and it loops again. If I'm thinking happy, I'm going to feel happy. If I'm feeling happy, I'm going to act happy. If I act happy, I'm going to attract happy, and it loops again. And this is how we perpetually stay happy.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Knowing Me, Knowing You with Paula. And you guessed right, I'm your host, Paula, all the way on the west coast of Canada. Now, in life, we meet so many different and interesting characters, right? And this is one of those moments for me, meeting my guest, Reverend Rance Dunbar, a vibrant spiritual leader, a fun, quirky, unassuming, inspirational voice. Listeners, be prepared to go on a journey of storytelling and golden nugget drops. We promise you this is an episode with much food for thought, inspiration, and interesting conversation. Rance Dunbar was born and raised in the United States, having faced a life of child abuse, loss of his mother at a young age, suicide attempts, prison life. He took steps to take back his life into a positive realm and into a business owner and spiritual leader, as well as becoming the chakra doctor. Besides the journey that he takes us on with the storytelling and golden nugget drops, he does also share with us about community, gratitude, being happy, the best way to start our day, and how learning to deal with our emotions is important to living a happier life. Now, Rance Dunbar is known for creating the miracle food, all-natural intracellular detox cleansing regime, and the FCA yoga-guided meditation. At the end of this episode, Reverend Rance Dunbar does leave us with some inspiring words of wisdom. So grab your pens and paper, be ready for an interesting listen, and let's head on in and meet this wonderful contributor to our community. Enjoy.
So my name is Reverend Rance Dunbar, the Chakra Doctor. I am from New Orleans, Louisiana, born and raised, and it is a pleasure to meet you guys on your podcast.
It's lovely to have you here as my guest. And yeah, I'm interested to know, because obviously listeners can't see what I'm seeing, but you have something that's burning there in the corner. What is that?
Oh, this is incense. So lovely. I'm a big fan of words. And also I'm a big fan of, you know, ancient history, ancient knowledge and things of that nature. Yeah. And so, you know, back in the day, in ancient times, incense were a thing that was believed to carry messages to the spirit world, depending on their fragrance and their probabilities and all of the things that came with their characteristics. So that's what you see, that little smoke right there. I'm a big fan of aromatherapy as well. I'm a big fan that if my nose smells good scents, it will take that good scent or good sense and add that into my overall subconscious common sense, if you will. And
so I think
incense give people a little bit more sense upstairs, just because they smell, because it smells good. You know, this is why the perfume industry is so big, and this is why different industries are so big. Like even your clothing industry, when they're washing, you know, detergent industry, they got to make it smell good. So it's something about good smells that, you know, invoke positive energy versus bad smells invoking, you know, negative energy. So, and it's the reason why
or negative animals, thoughts, right?
Right. And a lot of animals use their nose drastically to tell what their environment is or isn't. And mm-hmm. So it is a wonderful sense, because remember, it's part of our five senses, right? So it's a wonderful sense that we take for granted. And So back in the day, ancient times, they called it suffumigation. So y'all look up the word suffumigation. And suffumigation is what the ancients used to do to appease the gods or whatever particular deity that they were serving or whatever particular ancestor. If you were honoring your mother, your father that was passed away, or if you were honoring at a wedding, they had different reasons and different ways to light incense and suffumigation. When a baby was born, right, they brought Jesus the incense, and they brought Jesus the different incense, the myrrh, the frankincense, right? And so, you know, incense is used for multiple different things. That's what I love about it so much. So in today's time, I try to use it for all of those things at once. So yeah.
I love that. I have a humidifier at home. I also burn incense, but I have a, you know, one of those little, what do you call them? You know, I put in all my lavender and rose aromatherapy drops and everything. And
essential oils.
Your essential oils and stuff. And I love it, right? I have one of these work all day long. And it just makes me feel like I'm in this beautiful flower garden in nature. Right. And I find it's really calming, right? So I love that. I love that. Now, what also listeners can't see, and I want us to describe to them. So what I have is you sitting with this beautiful backdrop, and I see a lovely little cow in the backdrop there. So beautiful. And all the trees and the greenery and nature. And
yes,
you love nature. I mean, who doesn't love nature, right? I love nature.
I love nature. Nature loves me. I love nature so much. I definitely want to be around her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. She is my mother. And I, man, just think about this. You know, once we gain that relationship with Mother Nature like we do with our proverbial biological mothers, mm-hmm. oh man, the communication and revelations that she revealed to you are remarkably universal and infinite. And it blows your mind to even think that, wow, the planet is alive and breathing and thinking and feeling, and she can communicate with you and you can communicate mm-hmm. with her. Just like on the movie Avatar, how all of the people in Avatar were in sync and in tune with the planet. And mm-hmm. everybody got a chance to know each other, but everybody got a chance to know the planet through each other. And they all had the whole place had an affinity and a oneness with the planet. That so mm-hmm. much so when the planet was attacked, every creature mobilized, the nature's creatures along with the native creatures mobilized and protected the planet. I truly believe that if something of that magnitude was to happen to the earth, I believe that the animals and the birds, the bees and the trees, just like on Harry Potter and stuff, things that you didn't think were alive will begin to come alive just to protect the planet. And it's some movie-esque type thing, but that's just a belief of mine. I believe that all of those things you read in the Bible and all of the things you hear in Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, I believe all of those things are, you know, real to a degree. We just fell out of the belief. And so since we don't believe it anymore, we can't see it anymore.
Yeah. You know, nature, this is something I believe, is nature shows us the colors of our soul, our spirit, right? That's what nature, and that's why it's so important as human beings to connect with nature as much as we can. If we look right now at the change in the seasons, right, the fall season, how beautiful are those colors, the reds, the oranges? So beautiful, right? And when you come into the springtime, all the flowers that come blooming with all those magnificent colors, right? And that is what feeds our soul, right? And so it's important that we connect with nature as much as we can.
Proven that our metabolisms speed up and our immune systems and things in our body start to turn on whenever we spend prolonged amount of periods in nature. Mm-hmm. There are multiple studies in the medical industry that shows that nature, and this is why when somebody's in the hospital, they bring you plants or plant life, or, you know, it's always good to decorate your house with nature. Why? Because last time I checked, you get your oxygen from nature. The very beings that give you your oxygen are the very beings that, you know, basically consist of giving nature its template, the trees and the plants and the herb. You know, we forget this big thing. And the reason why I love the movie, The Lord of the Rings, because it showed the trees' plight, right? And it gave respect and honor to everything, everything from the hobbits all the way to the elves and the men and the trees. Everybody got a say, you know? And that's basically, you know, how I live. You know, I don't see the tree as a tree. I see the tree as an individual expression of consciousness, having an experience called tree.
And so you live in a place called
The Garden of Eden.
Yeah. And so why is it called the Garden of Eden?
Because it's an eco village. It is in Kennedale, Texas. That's the Dallas area. And because this place was meant to be a safe haven of healing and a place of rehabilitation through nature and through natural holistic means, like eating fruits and vegetables raw, like in the garden, and partaking into ceremonial events that help you get attuned to heal with nature. It's where you know, a lot of the cleansing that I do for people, they come here and they visit the garden and they come to my boot camp, right? It's a positive boot camp. I call it the positive penitentiary. And people will say, why do you call it a positive penitentiary? I say, because when you come to the garden, you get cut off from all of the things that were distracting you in the matrix, your phone, your car, your makeup bag, you know, you're waking up in the morning, your coffee, and all of the things that made you attuned to the system of the matrix. When you come to the Garden of Eden, it cuts you off from it to a big degree, meaning, you know, even though you might use the phone, you might use it once a day, right? Just to, you know, get 30 minutes of use, right? And the rest of the day, you're in nature and you're doing all kind of things that we learned as kids. You know, we learned a lot of kinetics as kids. And that's the great thing I got to say about me being born in 1982. I was able to see life transition from that analog society into this automatic internet society, that manual society to the automatic transmission society, right? And I got to see that up close. I got to see when video games really took the transition and when the mm-hmm. internet was actually born to the public. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when all of the things that kids take for granted now, because they're actually born with smartphones, they're born with iPhones. I got to see iPhone be birthed and see how it grew. Right. And I know for a fact that there's a big part now in today's society that we lack from when I was growing up. When I was growing up, our play was going into the neighborhood and in nature, going to play in the woods, you know, play in the street and play hand to hand, you know, right. It was touch. It was a lot of kinetic. And now our kinetics have turned into cybernetics, and we've replaced kinetic energy with cybernetic energy. And this is what has us disconnecting from the overall nature community.
Do you think that moving forward for young people who are now a part of this new cyber world, a little bit maybe of disconnect to nature?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think that simply starts with the parental, with the parental guardianship. Mm-hmm. You know, as parents, we have the right to, for 18 years, you know, in the United States, it's 18 years, we have the right to guard and give rules of engagement to the child. And if the rules of engagement is the child seeing me on the phone constantly, then the child is going to want to be on the phone constantly.
Amen.
Right? And so this is what the Bible says. The Bible says, train a child in the way it should go, and when it gets older, it will not depart from it. It also says it in science when it says the first 0 to 7 years are the most important years in the child's development and growth, because that's when the loop begins after the seventh year, and all of the things that it learned from 0 to 7, its brain changes and everything, and it's able to reenact what it has learned for the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. And so I always say that, you know, it starts with, and a lot of us 80 babies, 70, 60, 50 babies are entranced by the iPhone as well. Let me tell you that right now. I meet 40, 50, 60-year-olds who are on the phone more than the teenagers. They call the youngsters call Facebook the old folks home.
Well, what about TikTok, right? During the pandemic, everyone was taking over TikTok in their 40s, 50s, 60s, right? And right. I see husbands and wives, you know, when my husband and I go away for a weekend and we go down, you know, to the hotel restaurant for breakfast, or even when you go out for dinner and we see couples who are sitting across from each other or next to each other and they're on their phones.
I only use it when absolutely necessary. You know, I have a brand, and I put it in schedules. These many hours out of the day is going to be spent focusing on me and my family stuff, and then these set of hours out of the day, I'm going to exert that energy into other things outside of what I consider me, right?
Lovely.
And that's how I balance my day in two ways. The early part of my day, from about 4 o'clock in the morning all the way back to about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, 12 p.m. I call that my me time, right? That's me. I do me in various different ways, right? That time, that's an important time because that's the time that the body is gathering information and logging and information and just processing. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you're not supposed to be just waking up, going straight hustle and bustle. You're supposed to be waking up and processing and beginning a routine for your body and your mind to give you energy throughout your day. So I always made sure that my mornings are definitely for me. And then after that, I make sure that the afternoons are definitely for everybody else. And so it's just a balance of, hey, I got to make sure that I just give me the most time, right? And that way I could be the best me for you and you can right? see the best of me.
Yeah.
It makes no sense for me to give you my half because the name of the game is the all. And we are 100%. All a part of this one overall existence trying to learn and grow. And so if I don't give me the best, how would I ever be able to give you the best?
100%.
So that's a big thing. I always ask people, how much me time do you get? And predicated upon the me time that I can tell how much of that of themselves I'm going to be able to get when it comes to us doing business together or doing something together. Why? Because when you pay enough attention to yourself, you fall in love with that attention. You fall in love with parts of yourself that you never knew you could fall in love with. And that love, you're going to be able to reciprocate that to others.
Yeah, I see that as great guidance for listeners. You know, it's really important. And we're on this journey of self-reflection, self-discovery, coming from our authentic selves, filling our lives with gratitude and starting your morning exactly the way you're saying, I think is a wonderful guidance and some great golden nuggets and knowledge and information share that you're sharing there. But I would like to take a little step back. Let's rewind all the way back to when you were a young boy. Now, you mentioned you were brought up in New Orleans, right? And as a young boy, you had mentioned that you were brought up in a poverty-stricken environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you had your mom.
So when I was born, me and my mother, it was me and her, my mother and my father divorced before I ever got a chance to, you know, see them actually together. They were married when they got pregnant with me. But ironically, by the time I entered into the world, they got divorced. And then, you know, it was me and my mother. My mother was a single parent. And she was a strong mom, the second oldest of 9 children. My grandmother had 9 kids, one of those big families. And she raised, you know, the women in the family to be nice and strong, you know, women who aspire to achieve greatness. I remember coming up with my mom, right? I remember my mom's come up when we had to sleep on the floor of the apartment because we didn't have any furniture. And it was just one little black and white screen TV. And we had to make do with that black and white screen TV and a pallet on the floor in an apartment that didn't have no furniture and only like a plastic cup with a plastic bowl. And this is, and we were eating noodles. And I remember, you know, her and her going to school and work, you know, leaving me. And I remember being left alone at home at, you know, 4 years old because I was conscious enough to, you know, see her go through things. And seeing that matured me at an early age, I guess. From about 0 to 4 years old, smooth, you know, even though it was not the best materialistic-wise, the kinetic connection that me and my mom had between the ages of 0 and 4 were very wonderful. I got to see my grandmother. And then I can specifically remember at the age of 5, you know, my mother was a Pentecostal evangelist Christian. And so she believed, you know, and being a Pentecostal evangelist Christian, as well as having paganistic roots of New Orleans, New Orleanian hoodoo, right? I was able to see her fuse two faiths, two beliefs, two practices in front of my face. I was able to see her go to church with the Christians and still see her able to talk and mingle with her other, with the others, right? When one might call the others or the so-called pagans. And she had respect in both communities. They both called her a woman of renown in both communities. And at the age of 5, she met my stepfather, and his name was Arthur Washington, and they met in church. And this is why and I always tell my people my philosophy, I do not believe in getting married before you develop a sexual chemistry. I'm totally against that. Getting married before you fall in love, getting married before you develop a sexual chemistry, getting married before you see what life is like, going to be like with each other for a prolonged period of time and learning each other's habits, ways, because marriage is a lifetime till death do you part thing. As a marriage counselor, I preach this and teach this. We as human beings are creatures of habit, and we have all kinds of things, baggage to get rid of, right? So, but you know, back in the day, you know, she married him, and within like, what, 2 months? Meeting him, right? Married him within 2 months of meeting him, following, you know, the Christian Bible rules, getting that, you know, married before having sex and things of that nature. So, and that's a lot of things I found out too when asking different men, you know. I found out a lot of men got married to a lot of women and women got married to a lot of men simply because the religion said do it first. That happened, and she married a man that had demons. She married a man that had baggage that he did not exercise into a transmuted conscious leadership that can lead a marriage. But she married a man who didn't deal with his problems or the problems that happened to him from childhood. Mm-hmm. And those problems got perpetuated within our relationship. And so getting beat, you know, to the point of broken bones, that was a big, you know, big thing for me. Going for my first time going fishing, I got my collarbone broke because I couldn't catch any fish. Ultimately, these hardships of being beaten at such an early age to the state of broken bones are, you know, and I remember that was just the extreme cases. What about the cases when you were just hit because he was just feeling like putting his hands on you, right? And that was a full one. That was like an 18-month period, a rocky, tumultuous 18-month period from the age of 5 to about 6 and a half. But get this, when we left him and we thought we were free of him, do you know that even 3 years later, when I was 9 years old, the same man burnt our house down, Wow. Stalking my mom? So I wasn't free of this demon until after nine years old, right?
Wow.
And the recovery stage, then you're like, hold on. Then I'm like, well, what? Where's my dad? Like, yeah. My biological dad, you know what I'm saying? My biological dad was not far away. Mm-hmm. He could have been a man and did some things that could have prevented some things. And that didn't sit right with me as well. Early as a child, my mother didn't tell me this or program this into me or talk this. I was highly observant as a child. And I recognized, wow, he comes when he wants to come. He doesn't come when it's needed. And when everything is all good and he wants to just treat me out and, you know, and just be a papa father, I can expect him for birthdays, holidays, you know, the little usuals. I can expect him for the usual, but for the hard ingrained time, my mother gave me those. My mother got in the sandbox and played with me. My mother boxed with me. My mother got in the dirt with me, played football with me. My mother, she was the man, right? And so she was everything
to you, right? And an inspiration, I'm thinking as well, because
all of that is part of the everything. Inspiration, motivation, the disciplinarian, the nurturer, the carer, the caregiver, the one who, you know, the advisor, the counselor.
But you mentioned as well that she passed away when you were at the age of 16.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that was, like I always tell people, that's when the hell truly began. If I thought I was going, you know, like I said before, the little hells that I was going through from 0 to 16, I always had somebody to go through hell with me. I had my mom, but when mom dies on Christmas Day at the age of 16, now hell is fully in my hands and my hands alone. I no longer have a companion to go through hell with me. And my mother used to always tell me this. Like I told you, my mother was kind of prophetic in a lot of ways. And this is why, you know, and I'm very prophetic. I always had psychic abilities. I've always had precognitive, clair abilities, tele abilities. I got all of these traits from my mother, right? My mother knew everything. My mother knew every answer to every question. She, you know, she had a great response to every thing, a problem in life. She was everything. And then on Christmas Day, thing about to have, you know, while everybody's receiving everything for Christmas, or proverbially everything, their family time, their presents, their gifts for Christmas, literally everything is being stripped away from me, right? And so when she passed away, literally everything died, even a big part of me, right? And I tell people, train your children in emotion management, okay? Emotion mm-hmm. transmutation. There will be moments of grief. There will be times of horrible emotion. And if your child isn't well equipped to know how to transmute and handle and control the emotion can take the individual human being to very, very dark places that some may not come back from. In the Black community, yeah. we have a big thing with not knowing how to convey and transmute and control our emotions in the Black community. So a lot of topics don't even get talked about, a lot of things, because it brings up emotions and we don't want to be emotional. We want to be hard and all stuck and we're Black and we're proud and say it loud. Okay, yeah. But yeah. When it comes to your parent-child relationship, that wall needs to come down. You need to teach your child how to manage their emotions, how to control their mind, how to get into a positive state of being and not let this cruel world knock you down. Because what if one day you die? What are they going to do? How are they going to handle it? They're going to handle it how you taught them. So my mother was really good at scripture and she had all of these great, 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 great qualities, but I also was able to recognize the flaws, right? She taught me a lot of things, but her dying, nobody ever taught me how to handle death. And then, we teach our children how to handle death, what death is. It is guaranteed for everybody. If we taught our children how to handle these things, our children wouldn't go off the deep end when we pass. They'll know that we are in a better place and we taught them how to handle their absence, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And it spurred me into a dark world.
Yeah. Because this is what you also mentioned, was that you were involved with drugs. There was
the dark world.
Jail time, right? And world. So was this the moment that, because of all that you're sharing, that was a time then when you moved into drugs and then you ended up in prison?
Yes. When my mother passed, I'm the only child of my mother and my father and the big family that I had at the time, keyword had. Because family is determined not by blood. Family is determined by action. The big family that I had at the time, they left their hands up in the air and said, we don't want you. And so at 16, I'm in the Covenant House. I don't know if there's a Covenant House or you ever heard of the Covenant House, but the Covenant House is a big Catholic organization that helps runaways or throwaways or strays, if you will. And so I'm in the Covenant House. And now it went from 0 to 16 years of this woman giving me my food, clothing, shelter, education, medication, all of my knowledge, wisdom, and understandings to, okay, you know, fend for yourself. That's what it was. I was in an orphanage and I fought for myself. And I did a lot of things. I'm pretty sure I know this for a fact that I did a lot of things that I would not have done had I been taught differently when it comes to how to handle life situations. So she taught me how to seek God and seek the spirit and how to access these invisible powers and things of that nature. But she didn't tell me, hey, wait a minute, there are going to be things in life that's going to be making it hard to smile. You're going to have to be able to dance through your pain and your rain. You're going to be able to have to take that which is hurtful and turn it into something to that which is helpful. And I wasn't taught that. A lot of Black people aren't taught that. A lot of white people, Hispanic people, Asian people, we're not taught that in today's society. And this is why when certain things happen, you see that movie, like the guy, the revenge guy, his family dies, right? And now he goes on this big old revenge. He goes kill everybody, right? And it shows you how we don't know how to process and handle emotions. He cannot. Why can't you see that? Hey, you were in a risky and shady business that killed your family, instead of saying, oh, you killed my family and I'm about to go kill yours. Right. And so we never take the blame for our emotions and we never take the blame for our own actions. And so that's what that led me to. It led me to a dark place of suicide, addiction. It led me to drug abuse. It led me to the wrong partners in life, following the wrong crowds, trying to people please and put on for the wrong reasons and the wrong people because I wanted to be validated just so I couldn't feel the grief, just so that I can numb this emptiness of everything being gone, because everything has been, I was taken from me at the time. And yeah. So I didn't know how to process that or yeah. articulate that. And so therefore I articulated it through hurtful ways and hurtful actions, and those hurtful ways and hurtful actions harmed me the most.
I was going to say that. So where was there a time? What was the time in your life when you decided this has to stop and I have to buck up and take charge of my life and move myself on a different path? Was there someone that came into your life? What was that moment? When was that moment?
That moment came, believe it or not, that moment came when I was around about 29 years old. I was tired of repeating the same patterns that I didn't even know I was repeating at the time. I didn't know that patterns can be repeated if we do not correct the patterns. You know, all of the sciences that I teach people today, I'm letting you guys know that most of the sciences that I teach people today, I was not taught this by a parental guardian. More like I was showed by a parental guardian through the parental guardian not being there and me going through life seeking and searching. I always tell people there are many moments. It's not never just one moment. It's called connect the dots. It's a bunch of little dots that will be planted. And out of those seeds, certain trees, flowers, plants, and herbs will grow. Weeds as well. And yeah. So first and foremost, the first part of it is my mother teaching me spirituality and teaching me about nature and all of these things. Yeah. So that's ingrained. Then yeah, my father teaching me how to read and always read and giving me that philosophy, right? That's ingrained. Yes. Then my friends showing me how to stand up and be strong for myself. You know who taught me how to fight? Not my mom, not my dad, my female cousin. My female cousin, I was getting bullied in the neighborhood. My female cousin, literally the bully that was bullying me that I was afraid of, my female cousin went and beat him up. Like, and from then on out, I was never scared of a human being ever again in life after I see this female completely demolish this male, right? And it was a bunch of things that built the foundations. And then you have these, I always call out these master years. In your master years, you always have these revelations. But along your path, you will always get these little angelic nuggets, these little I call them fairy tales, right?
Yeah.
What a fairy tells you, the fairy godmother tells you, you're the most beautiful queen in all of the land. You're the beautiful king in all of the land. And somebody might sit next to you to a bus stop and give you a word out of nowhere. And you're like, what the heck was that? That was the moment, right? And then when you were sitting in alone, just and reflecting in yourself, and you heard that inner still voice speak, that was a moment, right? And then you have those big grand climactic moments that makes all of those other moment buildups is like, oh, okay, that was, it was like foreplay. It built up into a climax. And so it was all of the little bitty dots put together that built up into an overall climax. It was multiple gurus, not just one. And when I say gurus, I mean wise people, not people who are actually trained in India or martial artists, but real wise people who were able to give me real great lessons. And I was able to use those lessons to apply them over time, right? Yeah. And through trial and error, trial and error of trying to apply these high philosophies, through trial and error of trying to apply these high dietary disciplines, and, you know, I fell and I got back up and I fell and I got back up. And then that pivotal moment that you're talking about came at around about 30, 31, when it's like, okay, I got to get out of this pattern to where I'm attracting this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And I finally went on a war against myself at the age of 31.
Yeah.
At the age of 33, I won the war. Now, I'm letting you know, for the time before 31, it was always, if it was only for this, if only I could have this, I was always blaming something outside of me for my stuff, right? I was always thinking that I can do the wrong thing the right way, or the right way in the wrong way. You know, I always thought I could mix the ways and all of these things, right? And I always was trying to find a formula to crack life open, except going inside and looking for me and finding who I am and finding what I truly want and finding what I really like and finding what I really deserve and seeing myself as worthy and all of the stuff that we neglect daily, right? I finally went on the war against myself when I was 31. I culminated, meaning I started self-talking. At 31, I started saying stuff like, my life is my fault. Anything that happens is on me, right? I started making affirmations like, By this time on this day, I will have this in my life, right? I stopped blaming my stepdad for beating me and torturing me and whatever he did to me. I stopped blaming my mom for dying and leaving me alone to inherit this hell. I stopped blaming my family for abandoning me and leaving me out to dry. I stopped blaming for this girl for breaking my heart. I stopped blaming this dude for trying to hurt me. I stopped blaming the white people for enslaving black people. I stopped blaming everybody. I stopped blaming everything on the world. And I started blaming everything on me. And the moment, not a moment sooner, that's when my life began, slowly but surely, to grow in the right direction.
Yeah. And this is something that I think for listeners as well, you know, who will probably be nodding their head. And it's important that people always ask themselves and ensure that they are not putting blame on other people for things that are reoccurring in their lives, and they just take responsibility. But I want to move on to this. Obviously led you to becoming the chakra doctor, right?
Yeah. So the chakra doctor is a tree that was born and rooted and planted in dirt. And through that dirt, I grew and rooted the foundations of my tree. And as that root and my tree began to grow, I came across this particular spectrum ray of light called the chakras. All trees absorb light differently. And my path as a tree, growing as a tree, I ran into this path, this doctrine, or this word called the chakra. I was 26 years old, to be exact. I was in jail, in prison, 26 years old, and I ran across a book that was said, we're all doing time. And it was explaining how, no matter if you're in the, it was by this guy. He had this thing called the Ashram Yoga Prison Project. And he was a guy that had been in prison before, and he became a yogi and a master. And he said he always wanted to bring yoga to the prisons to help prisoners learn how to transmute their emotions and process these horrible, you know, sentences that they have. In that book, he explained about something called the chakra. Now, keep in mind that I've always believed in the spirit world. I've always believed in, you know, in church. And at church, they used to sing the song, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm going to Let It Shine." And, you know, Jesus is the light of the world. And, you know, we used to have all of these little songs in church that we always sung about the light. Well, little did I know that song was a riddle, a parable to a dynamic truth that most Christians, Muslims, and holy people today completely look over. And when I found out about the chakras literally translated in Sanskrit to English, literally mean wheel of light, or some translated as circle of light, or some may translate it as a sphere of light. And something about it rang true in me because the Bible told us that we have a spirit and a soul, and that's made of light, right? And everybody died. And when they see the light at the end of the tunnel, and a lot of things began to click for me when I began to read about the chakras. A lot of my old doctrines that I was taught when I was little began to make sense to me when I read about the chakra. A lot of things that I've seen on TV and all kind of downloads became a little bit more clear when I read about the chakra. Yeah, so at 26 kind of years
like
old,
the puzzle pieces, right? Like puzzle pieces like puzzle that are being put together, right? Yeah.
Right. The puzzle pieces. And so at 26 years old, I had created this way for me to feel and prove that the chakras were real and feel them. Mm-hmm. But guess what happened? I only did it one time. And that one time I did it, it went straight to my head and my ego, and I became holier than thou. And after that time, the universe literally kicked me out and put me on another journey to break me back down to size. You will not take this technology and go into the world holier than thou. You will take this technology and spread the light into the world the way the world was supposed to inherit the light. By the time I made it back to the age of 33, never forget it, I said, let me go back to the drawing board of the chakras. And that same guided meditation that I created for myself to get myself, keep myself from going into those dark places at 26. And I never revisited it again. I decided to revisit it when I was 33.
That's now then led to where you are today, where you have your chakra teaching, you have your healing sessions, and you have the FCA yoga coaching as well, right?
FCA yoga stands for Full Chakra Activation. And that's the name of the company, My FCA Inc. I am 100 trillion billion percent sure for a fact that I would not be here in front of you talking this had it not been for me discovering full chakra activation. Because full chakra activation is the number one thing. If you want to be technical and truthful, you said what that pinnacle moment, FCA, was the aha thing, hallelujah, all the angels sing, all of the cherubs and the seraphs rejoice. He cracked the codes to the universe. He's learned how to open up all of the chakras, not only learn how to open up all of the chakras within himself, perpetually, forever, continuously, they never turn off. But I'm able to take it and put it into a format to where the average layman who doesn't know crap from pudding when it comes to a chakra, right? Yeah. Who doesn't know nothing about a chakra, they can watch my tutorial, watch my video, and they will be able to physically feel their chakras. And man, that's when life completely changed for me when I rediscovered the exercise that I invented when I was 26, but I only did it one time. And I thought that one time was enough to suffice. Like, hi, I did it. Next thing, let's go. And I got egoic, and that ego nature took me into dark places that I didn't want to ever end up again. And I said, well, what's wrong? And I had to go back to the drawing board. And this time, repetition was the father of my learning. I didn't just do it one time. I did it all day, every day, by myself. In the bed, when I woke, when I sleep, when I woke again, and when I sleep again, on the toilet, everywhere, I activated my chakras. And when I was 33 years old, on the 33rd day, going into the 34th day of my fasting and activating my chakras, they turned on forever. And in that moment, 2015, I'll never forget it, I became the chakra doctor.
Right. Yeah. So I want to ask you there with the becoming the chakra doctor. So people can actually visit your website because you mentioned you have tutorials and meditations that people can follow.
Yes.
So for listeners, so
chakradoctor.org, chakradoctor.org. And when you go there, hit the tab in the top left-hand corner and it will show you how to navigate and everything you need to do on the website.
Your connection details are going to be clickable links in the show notes for everyone, so they don't even have to think of where they have to go. They can just go down there and click. Now, when we talk about the chakras, you also have you sell products on your website, and you have a product called the Miracle Food.
Yes. Miracle food, intracellular cleanse and detox. When I opened up the chakras and I became fully chakra activated, I turned that into a mission. I wanted to heal people. I wanted people to feel how I feel. The chakras, activating my chakras, makes me feel 10 times trillion better than any other sedative on the face of the planet. I never tell people that I created Miracle Food. I would tell people Miracle Food created me. One day I was in, literally in, and I always say Dr. Sabi has a big part of that too, because I met Dr. Sabi in 2014, and Dr. Sabi is the reason why I became a raw vegan in the first place, and a natural holistic healer, and a person, and a completely changed diet in the first place. It was both of those things. And while I was meditating, I actually got what I would like to call the download for the ingredients, how to mix the milligrams, how to do everything. And do you know that I've been, that we've been doing Miracle Food since 2017, like the actual brand product.
Producing the product, right?
Producing the product. Producing the product. I had people trying the different ingredients and buying them on their own before, but producing the actual product since 2017, everybody always say the same thing, just like they do with FCA yoga. They say, this product is great. This product is wonderful.
What are the ingredients to this miracle food?
So it's all natural beetroot oil, not powder, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Beetroot, all natural beetroot oil, all natural high milligram moringa oil, all natural CBD with no THC oil, and all natural black seed oil. And it comes you pair that with the 9 herbs in the miracle tea. And that's what makes the miracle food cleanse. The miracle tea has 9 herbs, and you can see that on the website and things of that nature. But the miracle tea has 9 different herbs. Those nine superfoods, but these 4 superfood oils mixed together as the perfect 13 herbal combination superfood blend. What, 47% of our customer base are return customers, and their age ranges from the ages of 34 to 64.
Who would want to take the product? Is this a product that you could take as a supplement?
I give this product to my newborn baby every day. I gave this product to my wife while my wife was pregnant for the whole 9 months. My 62-day-year-old baby can support her own weight on her own legs. If I hold her up and stand her, she can support her own weight on her own legs, and she can control her head movements.
So you talk about healing, though. So is this product for people that have certain ailments, or is this a supplement that you can take as a superfood? Okay.
I take it every day as a superfood, but the same superfood supplement that I take every day heals people of incurable disease as well.
Great. And then the detox element.
The detox element is the miracle food oil, the miracle tea, and the diet.
Okay.
I got a dietary plan that comes with it. It's called the Eden's Garden diet. And remember, in the Garden of Eden, that diet is uncooked food, raw fruits, raw veggies. And I have 90 different ways for you to tastefully blend raw fruits and veggies and make raw fruit and veggie meals. Why? And it's a 2-week cleanse. It's a 15-day cleanse. And everybody, I give people that 15-day cleanse. I give it to you in 15-day intervals simply because that's how the body's circadian rhythms progress throughout the months when you're going through your life. 15 days is a great, great time, but it's not too over time. Like, you can't do it. Oh, that's too long. I need, you can handle it from the supplemental level, 15 days. On the level where you're trying to cleanse disease out of the body, that's a consultation, because we got to know what kind of ailment you have so that we can know how long to apply the miracle.
So with the product itself, so you have, if you're doing the detox, do you actually get a booklet with your product that is sent to you, right? Okay.
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see a product like that. And I'm very big on supplementation. I'm very big on supporting the body, supporting the immune system, supporting our bodies on a cellular level.
Try this, man.
You know, because we live in a world where we have this influx of free radicals that are pushed through noise, pollution, diet, you know, so I think it's always important to support our bodies on a cellular level. I'd like to move on a little bit here and talk about happiness. What does happiness mean to you? That word, happiness.
Happiness So number one, happiness automatically means a genuine smile. One who smiles with their eyes as well as with their face, but a smile from within. They're smiling because they're genuinely in a high vibratory positive state. I know how happy you are by how you wake up in the morning. Those who wake up and those who wake up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning, y'all not that happy. Stop acting like it. Stop pretending like it.
Yeah, happy.
Yes. Happy. Yeah. Happy is smile for no reason. You know when you're happy? You're happy when people start asking you, what do you do? Why are you? I always see you smiling and I always see you in a positive state. How do you stay like that? I wish I was like you. That's when you know you're happy. When people start coming out of the blue and telling you, man, I wish I can handle life like you handled it and be happy even when I'm down, or be happy even when whatever's going on. You'll know a true happy person when something bad happens, right? And even through that something bad, they're still able to find the happy silver lining. So how often are you genuinely smiling? And where is that smile coming from? Is that smile coming from an outside source? Then that's not a genuine smile. Mm-hmm. If that smile is coming from an inside source, then you know it's a genuine smile. And now you record, how often do I just naturally smile because my insides just feel good? And nice. This is how you know, and this is how you know whether you're a happy person or an unhappy person. If you count the times in your day and the majority of the times in your day are not spent smiling and feeling good on the inside, then you need to check your happy meter and you need to pour you some happiness oil. And how happy are you in your mind? How happy are you in your emotions? How happy are you in your physical body on your inside? Are your physical organs feeling okay? Are you, is your brain feeling okay, right? Are you, right now, those who are listening, do you feel sluggish? That's your happy meter. You got to check your happy meter. Happiness makes you feel up. Happiness makes you feel not mania, but just a natural upbeat that you have towards life. And it comes from the things that you tell yourself, because the things that you tell yourself influence the way you feel. The things that you feel influence the way you act, and the things that you act influence what you attract. So it's all a system, right? If I think it, I feel it. If I feel it, I act it. If I act it, I attract it, and it loops again. If I'm thinking happy, I'm going to feel happy. If I'm feeling happy, I'm going to act happy. If I act happy, I'm going to attract happy, and it loops again. And this is how we perpetually stay happy. I don't share that. I live it. So people always, I don't even have to share it. I live it, and people always ask me, how? What's going on?
Yeah.
Why are you so happy? Like my wife, man, ask my wife, I laugh in my sleep. She catch me laughing. I'd be like, what I was laughing about? I don't know, but you were laughing for about 10 minutes in your sleep. I am so happy because I know for a fact that life is what you make it and not what has made you or what has happened to you. Like we take life for what has happened to us, and that's the wrong life. Life is what I make out of what has happened to me. That's the real life. Mm-hmm. And once you become happy with what you're creating in life, you're going to just have a natural happiness about yourself. First and foremost, just because you improved yourself. Self-improvement brings a natural rise in your happiness because happiness, you feel good that you're eating right.
Yeah.
You feel good that you're working out. You feel good that you're reading books now. You feel good that you cut the negative people off. And all of these things make you feel great. Right? And the more you can make yourself have genuine happiness for yourself within yourself, meaning I'm happy the way I'm making these deals and these meetings come about. I'm happy that I'm influencing people on a positive level. I'm happy for my dog. I'm grateful, right? Great gratitude brings happiness. The practice that I see brings the emotion of happiness the greatest is gratitude. If you're not grateful for what you have, you cannot genuinely be happy for what you have.
100%. When you look back at the journey that you've traveled with your life, I mean, you've been through a lot as a young person. You know, your experiences in prison must have taught you a lot of life lessons. What advice would you give to a younger Rance?
Activate your chakras, Rance. This is the only thing that's going to get you over this hardship of emotional turmoil that you're going through. The chakras are your spirit and your soul. And your spirit and your soul is the only thing that is willing to command such a weak fleshly vessel. I know you're sad right now, and I know it feels like, the whole world is down on you, and I know it feels like your mama has left you, but she's really not gone. Do you know that the spirit lives on after the body? That you know that you can actually communicate with her if you wanted to, because you have the power to do that, Rance. Do you know that that has happened to you because life designed for you to walk down a certain path and your mother couldn't travel that path with you? Do you know, Rance, that everything that is happening to you is a part of the divine plan, and no matter what you say you signed up for, do you know that I'm here to help you remember what you signed up for, Rance? The first thing I want you to do, Rance, is activate your chakra every day, all day. Don't stop until you are where you need to be in life.
Nice. I love that. If I say the word community, what does this word mean to you? What comes to mind?
The root word in community is unity. The other root word in unity is calm, communication. Unified communications. Community is being able to unify in any communication. And the first unification that, and the first communication that we're supposed to unify in is the unification within our cellular structure, the unification within our mental structure, the unification within our physical, emotional, and spiritual structures. After you unify and become unified and one with yourself, one within the all within yourself, then and only then will you be an eligible candidate to be a factor in a community, because a community is something, someone, or multiple different aspects that come together and unify to create a whole language of communication. The greatest language on the face of the planet is non-verbal. In order for us to be great community members, global community members, because we all have our different individual communities that we come from, but the overall goal is a global community. And so in order for us to unify and communicate on a unified level, we have to heal and unify ourselves with ourselves first. Become the best you, and you'll be able to be the best in any community.
Well, Rance, I would say this is a perfect spot for us to end. Thank you so much for your time, your energy, and your contribution. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me. I love it.
That is the end of another episode, listeners. Please remember to rate, review, and share. We love you for the attention, and this helps others who may come upon this podcast and wonder whether it is all worth a listen. Also, don't forget it is free to subscribe, and you can receive notifications when new or bonus episodes are released. Our guest connection details, as well as our own, are clickable links in the show notes. We invite you to join us on our Instagram page and Facebook group if you can. Links are in the show notes. And we're going to leave you with these inspirational words from our guest, Reverend Rance Dunbar.
The practice that I see brings the emotion of happiness the greatest is gratitude.
Gratitude.
If you're not grateful for what you have, you cannot genuinely be happy for what you have.
That is it from me, your host Paula, here at Knowing Me, Knowing You. Thanks for tuning in. Goodbye for now.